chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the motto of the Petalumis, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days.
This is KRCB FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa.
Will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB Public Radio in Sonoma County. Yay, great place to be. How are you doing? It's Michelle Anna Jordan. And I have to thank Mike Young and Kirby Pierce for being at the helm last week so I could have a night off. My birthday eve. Thank you, Mike.
Oh, you're welcome.
You guys have a good time?
Yeah, it was fun. It's kind of fun to. It's kind of stressful to try and figure out how to ask and answer questions, even when you're talking with a good friend on the air. You really do a good job of making the conversation flow.
Thank you, very much. Well, I decided that I just wanted to. I wanted to head out on my birthday adventure, which I do every year. The same place now. Thank you, Francis Ford Coppola, for opening a pool so that while all of my friends are going back to work after all of their 4th of July fun, I have something fun to do. And, you know, every year it has gone differently. And it's been lovely. Sometimes we've had 2 gabines and 8 people or 12 people. And everybody's pretty mellow and we tend to eat a lot and drink a lot, and we take naps, and then sometimes we end the night playing bocce. Well, there were only 4 of us, and we actually got a little wild. I have no idea how many bottles of Sophia sparkling wine we drank, but I heard today that we, instead of walking down the long stairs to the parking lot, that we took the elevator.
Oh, no.
I woke up in the middle of the night, in bed with the puppies, so everything was okay.
Hopefully you didn't drive yourself home.
Oh, no. I didn't drive my... I do not drive there. I do not drive back. Yeah. No. I would not do that. It's the one day of the year that I can, you know, just not be particularly responsible for absolutely everything like I usually am in my life. Anyway, it was a great start the night before just to chill out, so thank you for that. And Friday night, I once again got to go to a Giants game, my second one ever.
Oh, how fun.
And again, it was every year the Coppola winemaking team, and you know, they produce a lot of wine. There's more than one winemaker. They have a lot of acreage. They also purchased a lot of grapes. I think he's the second or third largest producer of Malbec in the United States.
Hmm.
And that's just one of the varietals. They have several levels of wines. So once a year, they get the Virgin Airlines Loft.
Oh.
And they do Diamond on the Diamond. And Diamond is their second or third. I think it's Sante, Votre Sante, Diamond Cut, Director's Cut, and then another level after that. So they have all of their, I think it's four or five Diamond Cut wines. And Virgin Loft there is right practically on the field level. You know, it's the lowest of all the boxes behind first base and right in the first base outfield. And we had for at least half the game, we had Hunter Pence right there next to us.
Oh, how fun.
And when he hit his, several balls, like, almost made it into the loft. And I was sitting right in front, so that would have been a little scary. But when Hunter Pence hit his Grand Slam home run, it went right over us. And the guy, I don't know if you, a guy jumped in after it, like, really, really fast. The ball hit, and less than a second later, I think he was in the water. And we got to just run from one side of the two-room suite we had to the other side where the windows were and see him there in the water. So it was very exciting. Not a lot of tension in the game. I don't know if you watched it.
No, I didn't watch it.
Score of 2 Philly, 15 San Francisco. So it wasn't like, no. It was ever touching. You know, by the fourth inning, you knew who was going to win. But it was really fun to see Giants run so much.
Yeah, I mean, then you can settle back and just enjoy the atmosphere and not
absolutely
have to worry about watching the game.
Absolutely. And I did watch the game.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, I did watch the game. And my favorite part, this is probably blasphemous to people who like baseball, but one of my favorite parts is the Seagulls. Because they start, as you get towards the eighth inning, I don't know what it is, but they know the game's going to be over soon. And they start, so, you know, they come in a little ways after the sun goes all the way down, but more and more of them come. And they're waiting until the game's over. And the minute the game's over, they are down on the field and people are throwing them popcorn and there's leftovers and stuff. But I just love the way they seem to have this knowledge that it's ending.
Hmm. And yeah, they're pretty smart birds.
Well, birds are pretty smart,
yeah.
I think.
Most
in general.
Of them are, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, crows will recognize an individual human.
And they will teach their offspring how to recognize that individual without first showing the offspring, yeah, the individual. Crows are amazing. Birds are really smart. Bird brain is a misnomer.
It's a compliment, right?
It's a compliment.
Should be a compliment.
Yeah, and it's like that whole thing, you know, with computers. What is it that every 18 months or every 20 months,
Moore's Law,
twice as fast and half as big.
For half the cost, I think they said.
Yes. I think we should think about bird brains in that way. They're like really tiny computers, fast computers.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I did. And then, I've had to... by the way, I'm the guest tonight. It's me and Mike. People are so busy today.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a very great interviewer, so we're just going to chat.
Yes, and I've got all kinds of things. If you want to get your pens and paper out, I think I'm going to do a book giveaway. I'll talk about the books in a minute, and then I'll give two very special vintage books away towards the end of the hour. One of the things I've done is spent a week going through my bookcases. I do that about once every 10 years or so, and plus I acquire so many books. And I just have, what I focused on this time, other than cookbooks I no longer wanted and novels I knew I didn't care about, mm-hmm, I also weeded out some duplicates because I have, I attract books in certain genres, and for a number of reasons, I have a lot of duplicates. So I have two really lovely duplicates tonight that I will be talking about and then giving away later in the hour. And if you love food, writing about food, in a way with a lot of depth, you're going to want to pay attention. But after the game, you know, and I got home at 1 o'clock. The game didn't get over until 10:30. And I was taking the ferry, because I don't want to drive. Uh-huh. I don't want to drive down and deal with park. $35 to park, $10 over the bridge. So I take the ferry down, but the ferry leaves 30 minutes after the last out, but it left a little later than that. So I didn't get home until after 1. So I was, you know, I probably got to sleep about 3:30 or 4, because you don't go to sleep right away. And the next day was a pretty special day, because I took a year off of my studies of hula to finish these books.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had to get my energy back and clean my house and, you know, get my bearings to be able to go back to hula. But I said, I'm going back. I don't care how tired I am. This is the day I'm going back. And it was really a remarkable experience. And it was very special. And I definitely chose the right day to go back. And there's something going on, Mike. I don't know if you know about it, but I think it's something that everybody should know about it, because it's, in a certain way, I think it's the whole earth talking through what is going on the island of Huaimoku, the big island, and what's going on with Mauna Kea. I don't know if you've been hearing about it. If you go to Facebook, there's a page, Protect Mauna Kea. There's several pages, but one of the best ones to go to is Protect Mauna Kea. And Mauna Kea is, of course, the northernmost of the two. I think there's actually 5 volcanoes on Huaimoku. This is the northernmost, and it's the highest mountain in the world if you measure from below the sea.
From the sea floor.
From the sea floor up. Yeah. It's the highest mountain in the world. And there are, on the summit, there are 13 telescopes.
Mm-hmm.
There are 13 telescopes. Several of them are illegal in that procedures, there are procedures in place, and the procedures were not followed. They were just, you know how government comes in and does that. Well, now there's a proposal for an 18-story, 30-meter telescope, not on the summit because there's no room, and the plateau, there's this plateau where they want to build it, and one of the things that will happen, one of the many things that will happen, is the people of Waimea, which is just the most, I love Waimea, above, you know, up in the cloud zone above Kona. Not so much above Kona, north of Kona, but if you go to Kona and then drive north and then east, you end up in Waimea, and it's a lovely town. And I particularly like it because if it's really hot and dry in Kona, as it almost always is, you get up to Waimea and it's chilly. Anyway, if they build it, and it's an international project, China is involved. And there have been all these underhanded ways that they've gotten it through, and they've not done the environmental impact reports. They've not followed the procedures that are in place. They're just blowing them off. Where they plan to build it, it will have to go down 2 or 3 stories below ground to sustain this 18-story structure. And at that point, it starts getting into the water table. And it's a really important water table. Mm-hmm. But it will also, those 18 stories will be visible to everyone on that side of the island. Everyone in Waimea will see this towering structure.
Oh, that's terrible.
So it will destroy the landscape. Plus, these are sacred grounds, sacred heiau, sacred remains, all sorts of important sacred pieces of property that belong to the native Hawaiians. So there has been going on now for months, and it's a very interesting story how it started. Pretty much started by one woman. There have been peaceful sit-ins and lots of arrests, and they forget which body it was, just passed to go ahead. And now they're claiming that they have to close the saddle road, which goes over goes past Mauna Kea, or over Mauna Kea, but just not over the summit. So they're doing everything they can to stop people from protesting, stop people from sitting in, and protecting the builders. It's corrupt, and it's deeply damaging on so many levels. And I was very lucky to hear Auntie Pua Case talk about this. She's been spearheading all this. And there's a lot of geology and what we can call even spiritual geology that I'm not that conversant in. But Mauna Kea is connected to 20 other mountains in the world, and it has to do with one thing, the water table. Mm. And something is happening with the water table in Mount Shasta as well right now, which is pretty gruesome. So anyway, I went back to my hula class. And this is, it's a very serious class. It's not like you don't go and wave your hands and, you know,
yeah,
sing
aloha.
Yeah,
we've been working on that for 3 or 4 years now, right?
Well, this is actually one that I've been in for since 2008. It's not other one.
Okay.
That one I had to quit because of the books. But instead of doing, you know, maybe our warm-up and our chanting and eventually our dancing, we paint. There's an expression. You see it in shawls, on T-shirts, on bumper stickers. We are Mauna Akea, and that means we are the mountain. We are Mauna Kea. Mm-hmm. And it's a worldwide movement. You see this in Germany. You see it, you know, it's gathering momentum. And one of the things that is keeping the people who are protesting there feeling strong is that they're gaining momentum of support all over the country. So the first thing we did was paint on the door that goes into our halau. We are Mauna Wakea. Mm-hmm. And we all participated, and I was the only one with graphic skills, so I was the one chosen to do the pencil lettering before we started the painting. So it was... I'm gonna sneeze. And on that note, I'll be right back. Ashu! 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 Okay. Allergies. If you have really bad allergies, it's because of the drought. The droughts in Sonoma County are really, in my experience, make allergies blossom. I just sneezed, I think, 5 times in a row there. Thanks to Mike for jumping on a CD really fast. So anyway, we painted that and drew the image of the mountain that is being used in all kinds of things. So if you're curious about this, it really ties in fact, with some a native tribe, the name of which I'm not going to be able to pronounce on the air. It's a bit of a tongue twister. It is their property up near Mount Shasta that was originally taken to create Shasta Lake, and now they're attempting to take more. And it's taking water from Northern California and putting it through two enormous, enormous pipes and carrying it down to Southern California, and it will destroy several salmon runs. And Brown is pushing this through, and it's really frightening. Anyway, these people have connected by coincidence, by running into each other on Huai Moku, and now they've taken on each other's cause, and there's been a lot of testifying at and standing with the signs in solidarity in Sacramento, as well as there at Mauna Kea in Hawaii. So it is all connected, and it seems like one of the things that's happening is the issue of how we care for the land, how we protect our water. And, this happened 2 days ago. I didn't get to watch because I was on my way to the Giants, but there were hearings about this. And I'm sorry that I forget the board. I will post the link on Mouthful's Facebook page, though. There were hearings in Hawaii about this, and one of the members of the board actually said this. He said, we need to get... They were talking about the protectors of Mauna Kea talked about how important it is not to contaminate that source of water. I mean, that's been a source of water since people were there. And someone actually said, that is why we need that telescope. We can find water on Pluto, and we have to start studying that now.
Hmm.
Actually said that.
That's pretty bizarre.
How many light years away is Pluto? you know,
well, it's eight light minutes, because the New Horizons probe is just getting there, and it takes 8 minutes and some seconds for the radio signal to get back.
Wait, but what does that? How does that translate into human years?
Well, it's—I don't know. Basically, it's traveling at 186,000 miles a second.
Second,
and so it takes eight minutes. So, I'll go ahead.
But not to move something physically. That's
no,
light.
No, it's utterly. But I mean,
it's impossible.
A trip
it's like
to Mars takes about would the trip 30, they're planning to Mars wait. Takes about 3 years
okay.
one way.
Yeah,
and so Pluto would be a lifetime.
And bringing water back. And that's the, I mean, it was
ridiculous.
Just crazy. And these are people who are in power. So that's what I did on Saturday. And it was really, really great to be a part of it and great to know more about it. And you can go to my Facebook page, Michelle Anna Jordan, and I have some things posted. In fact, I have a video of the door and the final painting of it. So that was my birthday week. Now, let me tell you right now about the two books that I am going to offer to you. One is A Cordial Water by M.F.K. Fisher. It is a garland of odd and old receipts to assuage the ills of man and beast. It is a very short book, probably her shortest. It is very charming. My favorite part of it was... Just something how to cure a cold involves drinking, putting a top hat on your bedpost, the foot of your bed, and drinking brandy until you see a top hat on both posts. But there's a great story about a cat, mm-hmm. a male cat. I think his name might be Blackberry, and just this horny old male cat who finally thinks he's dead, and he has just gotten so ill from fighting, you know, carousing, and he's practically dead, but he comes back yet again. And it's just about how sort of the body wisdom that he has to come back again and again.
Yeah, they know how to heal themselves, yeah. and they just disappear for a while and yeah. come back.
Yeah,
why
and
not?
You know, that takes me right back to things like the mountain. Mm-hmm. You know, and mountains and forests and that sort of thing, and creatures, they know how to heal themselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're the ones who don't if we stop listening to our ancestors. And it seems to me that that's what the Western world has done. The Western world has stopped listening to its ancestors and are trying to drown out ancestors from all of the different Native Americans in the United States. Look at what's happening in Greece. You know, we're all Greek. We got so much of democracy and so much of everything from Greece, and now they're trying mm-hmm. to solve the problem on the backs of the poor.
Yeah.
You know, so it's happening all over the world, and it seems like something has to break in a good way, we hope. Anyway, Cordial Water by M.F.K. Fisher. It's really a charming book. I had, I think, three copies. I'm only giving up one. This edition was published by North Point Press in San Francisco in 1981. So it's, you know, and when I know that when she was asked what her favorite books were that she'd written, here we can say, sometimes people ask me what I think is the best book I have written. My only answer is that I have never been satisfied. But as things now stand, I feel that my translation of Briat Severin's Physiology of Taste, which of course I did not write, and A Cordial Water are perhaps the pick of the litter. So that book will be given to someone who calls when I tell you to call at the end of the hour. And the other one is one of the most charming books about France that anyone has written in English. It is When French Women Cook by Madeleine Kamen. Madeleine Kamen, of course, had, I think it was two restaurants in New England. She taught here in Napa at School for American Chefs at Beringer Vineyards in the late 80s and early 90s. I attended, I think it was her second session. She's written many tomes on cooking, huge, thick books. But this book, which I believe was her first, looks at... Let's see how many. It looks at a number of women doing French home cooking. Yeah. And as I always say, you know, for a cuisine to really be a cuisine, it has to be in the home. It can't just be in restaurants. So we have Marie Charlotte, Victoire, Henriette, Mimi, Claire, Angenie, Letitia, Magle. And it weighs in at about 350 pages. It's not just recipes. There's a lot of storytelling about each of the women and about ingredients. It really is a charming book, and I'm offering you actually the most charming of them. I love the hand-drawn cover. It just really has the greatest image. It's a lovely book, but I have a copy that she signed to me, and it's a different cover. And I thought, what do I give up? The one that she signed to me, obviously not. So that one we're going to give away as well. And now we're going to take a little musical break, and we're going to come back and talk about Sharon O'Connor and her menus and music. She was a guest on Mouthful many years ago, and she is still doing what she does so well, and I'm hoping to have her back. So here is a little bit of music from her CD, The Irish Isle.
And I picked this one. I picked the song because it's a song that the group I'm, the men's a cappella group that I'm in, does this song also.
Cool. Are you going to sing along?
No.
That was from The Irish Isle. What's the name of that song?
That's Down by the Sally Gardens.
Ah, no lyrics, though. No vocals on this one.
Nope.
Okay. Sharon O'Connor has for quite a long time. In fact, let me see what year this one was published. I think it is the early 1990s, if it says, and it must say... Why does it not say... 1997. She has been doing themed cookbooks. This one is called The Irish Isle, and it's a new Irish cuisine with traditional Irish music. And it comes in this very nice box that you open up like a book, and then inside you have the book, and then you have underneath the book, you have this nice little cut thing for the CD. And she has all kinds of themes. She has rock and roll, diner, opera, spa, many, many, many. And I just went to her website to see what she was doing, and she has so many more out now. Her website is musicandmenus.com. So I'm going to give her a call and see if we can get her up here. Another one she has is, A Table for Two, Cooking with the Blues, New American Comfort Foods, All American Blues, Home with Baby, Easy Recipes for New Families with Soothing Guitar Lullabies. Another one, Dining at Great American Lodges, Legendary Lodge Recipes with Music by the Big Sky Ensemble. If I remember correctly, she also plays possibly, maybe with the San Francisco Symphony, I'm not sure. I kind of remember that. Seems like maybe she's a cello player, which is awesome. Cellos are so great. She's got Paris cafes, a villa in Tuscany, all kinds of things. They're really fun. Chocolate Bliss. And the music that goes with Chocolate Bliss is romantic bossa nova music. She's got the Cocktail Hour with jazz, with Parisian bistro recipes. She's got French jazz, cool jazz for the organic vibe book. I wonder if she'd do a book. I wonder if she'd do a book with me for what I for what I write my books to. Each book has had. Since the beginning, the first book I ever wrote was all Elvis Costello, and then was Elvis Costello, and then a friend of mine, I wasn't quite getting the book finished as soon as I should have. A friend of mine would come over about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, Rob Cole, Mr. Music, and he would basically set up a little DJ booth in the living room, and he would play music, because he knows my taste. He would play music until, and I would write until like 3 in the morning. Oh, it was fun. Amazing. But he would always bring it back to Elvis Costello, because that was my fuel at the time. And then my 7th or 8th book, Polenta. Polenta was a comic, was a combination of the Ramones and Hole. And you wouldn't think it. You would think that it would be Puccini.
Yeah.
And I started out with Puccini, but it wasn't the right energy for for the fast paced testing that I was doing.
Well, see, I've never heard the whole of Hole. I don't listen to modern music
Hole,
that much.
The reason I listened to Hole, Kurt Cobain had died a year before I started working on the book, and I really, really loved Kurt Cobain's music and Nirvana. I think he's absolutely take your breath away genius. Really music that went straight to my heart. And like a lot of people, I got caught up in the evil Courtney Love attitude. Mm-hmm. And I just decided, and I'm not really sure what made me decide, I just decided, you know, I at least owe it to her to listen to her album. I need to listen to the album that came out. And so I did a combination of the Ramones, which always give me good working energy, and Hole, and I came to love it. It's a brilliant album. It's really, really brilliant. And frighteningly prescient. It reads... You know what I mean by reads when you say music. Mm-hmm. It reads like somebody who's in deep mourning, but the album was finished before he died. It's sort of haunting.
Yeah. It might be interesting to do a show sometime of your cookbook music.
That way, yeah, I could. Yeah, I have to go back and find some of my notes. We did one show, one of my favorite shows. I wanted to do this so bad, and I finally did. Donuts and Hole. I had 2 or 3 donut makers. Or I had somebody who wrote a book about donuts, Stephanie Rosenberg, and then I had 2 donut producers, and then Hole, Donuts and Hole, and I just cracked myself up. So yeah, I could put that together sometime. So you're pointing to we can do that. But actually, why don't we take one more musical break now, and then we're going to talk about some of my books and some things that are coming up.
Thank you.
That is a traditional Irish song, of course, Carrick Fergus, from Sharon O'Connor's The Irish Isle, New Irish Cuisine, Traditional Irish Music. If you're interested in this sort of thing, you want to check out menusandmusic.com. And she's got all kinds of other things going on. She's really expanded since she was on Mouthful. She's got stuff about, you can travel with her. She's going on a cruise from Rome to Barcelona. Actually, she already did that earlier this year. She sells gifts, things for the home. But we will try to get her on to Mouthful again to talk about maybe what her next one is going to be. Now we're going to move on to someone you know has a bunch of books out.
Yeah, Kirby.
Kirby
and I were talking up some of them last week.
Yeah, they sent you three out of the six new ones. And I, the one that I wanted to talk about the most tonight, I forgot to bring. I can certainly do it, but without the visuals. It's basically what I have. You guys talked about meatballs, right? More than meatballs?
We talked a little bit about meatballs. Mostly we talked about grilling, and then we talked about the promotion that you had going on. I think we mentioned one meatball dish, but I'm not absolutely sure.
Okay, well, one of the things that I do in most of my books is I don't just give you recipes. I give you thing. I try to teach you so that actually if you never use my recipes, you've gotten something.
Well, that was one of the things that Kirby mentioned that he really loved about your books was that, like you say, it's not just cooking. It's why do I care about this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's interesting about the fact that you use caul fat or what else is, you know, why do we have 17 different kinds of salt in this book?
Yeah, or 30. and where do you get caul fat? And, you know, what really is mustard? And what do you need to know about mustard? But also, what do you need to have in your kitchen? Do you need to have all the latest things that people try to sell you? Or are there certain essential things you should have in your kitchen to make cooking fun and not overwhelming and easy? And I also try to take as local approach as I possibly can without limiting myself to a Sonoma County audience, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I have a real bone to pick these days with NPR. With NPR. There was a story about, I think it was on All Things Considered, and they were talking about, and they do this a lot, they do this not just with food, but they do it a lot with food, and they, instead of taking the logical, local, what is easy to know attitude, they start with the biggest, and they sort of they're very dismissive about farmers markets, about gardening, about raising your own food. And I feel like the movement of looking local first has really gotten away from them. And so they were talking about how, oh, there's this new phenomenon. People want to know more about where their meat is from and how it's processed. So how they did that was not look, because it's not just Sonoma County that is doing regional and local
I know.
At all.
In fact,
there was something fabulous going on today. You could go to Beet Generation Farm and process your own chicken.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah. So I haven't heard yet how that went, but in fact, I'd asked them to be on Mouthful. We'll have them on soon to talk about how that went. But, you know, every community in America, virtually every community has a farmer's market, a CSA, more than one farmer's market, CSA programs, community gardens, backyard gardens. So in talking about understanding where your food is from, they went to the largest animal processing plant in the world.
Yeah.
And they made it sound, I mean, first of all, people don't want to know the grisly details and how many, you know, and then they described it and, you know, this particular cow, right now they're taking off the sheep's, the cheek meat, and eventually, you know, this cow could be in like, and with, you know, 500 other cows and ground beef. So they start from the big way and they talk about what, you know, it will be sold and then it will be relabeled at all these different supermarkets all over the country. And I was overwhelmed by the time I was listening to it. It's so much easier, you know, go to your farmer's market. If you don't have a farmer's market, go to the store where you can talk to the butcher.
Yeah.
Find out who's local. It's not that hard. It's not that hard unless you don't have transportation. There are some infrastructure issues, and there's a lot of great nonprofit groups working on solving, you know, the issue of food deserts. But anyway, my books, I try to do that, and I try to give sources and resources, not just from Sonoma County, but throughout the country.
Yeah, I know one of the earlier books of yours I had was the first edition of Mustard.
Mm-hmm.
And at the back of it, you listed a whole series of places, like at the time, I think you included Penzies and some of the others,
mm-hmm.
that you could buy spice by mail order if
mm-hmm.
you weren't, you
and
know,
I still do that.
In a place where you could go to 15 different spice shops.
Yeah. And I still do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important. And I was so upset with NPR for making it, number one, making it sound impossible to avoid corporate food. And
yeah.
It's never been easier to avoid corporate food. I don't think, well, not since corporate food dominated, certainly 100 years ago, maybe even 75 years ago, yeah. It was easy. But since that's become the norm, we've made so much progress.
Well, I came to California from northern Colorado, and near where I lived was one of the biggest Iowa beef processor feedlots mm-hmm. in the country. And it was literally a mile and a half. You'd be driving down the road for a mile and a half of pens of 50 or 100 or 300 cattle in a little tiny pen.
Like Harris Ranch out on Highway 5.
Yeah, it's like that, only mm-hmm. it was bigger.
Bigger, wow.
And it was just disgusting. I mean, and yeah. then they all that beef went right into the town of Greeley was where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a square mile plant processing this meat.
God.
You know, your hamburger could be any one of 700 or 800 cows that day.
Yeah, a mixture of them.
And you have no clue what might have been wrong with any one of those cows, and it was mixed into all of the meat.
Yeah, and now you can go in Sonoma County, you can go to, say, Green String Farm out at the corner of Adobe and Freights Road, and they get their deliveries of one cow. You know, it's fat, and the meat's really good, and the price is $5.99 a pound for grass-fed meat from a single animal.
Well,
it's amazing.
My parents used to buy half a cow at a time.
Mm, yeah,
you know, and they'd have it cut up and freezer wrapped, and they put it in the freezer, and they knew exactly where it came from.
Yeah, and that's getting a lot more common today.
Yeah,
you know,
I've got a friend that is buying half a hog at a time now.
Mm-hmm. And we don't have as big of freezers as we used to have.
No. So,
but you can actually do storage lockers.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I wanted to go. You've got the
picture you really like.
To the grilled pizza page. So last week, Kirby and I talked about grilling.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through tomatoes, and I saw that grilled pizza, and I thought, oh, man, this is perfect. It's tomatoes. It's Michelle's cookbook. It's grilling. It ties into all of them. And then Kirby and I got so wrapped
so excited
up in the show that we didn't even have time to get to the grilled pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks what looks wonderful.
It's so easy to do. I've been doing it for years. In fact, another time I know that you and I met when I gave away coming to your house and cooking here for a donation to KRCB. Well, I did another one where part of the focus was on grilled pizzas. This is out in Occidental, I think.
Hmm.
And making a grilled pizza in certain ways is easier than making a pizza in your oven, because ideally you would have an oven with wood heat, you know,
yeah,
and a stone floor to put it on, and it will cook in a minute and a half. Some of us have that, but most of us don't. I certainly don't. So with a grilled pizza, the main thing is you do need a clean rack,
mm-hmm,
to put it on, but you make your dough, you get your dough nice and stretched, and you put it on, and it takes about 90 seconds, depending on how good you are at stretching. It takes about 90 seconds. It shrinks up a little bit, and then you very quickly flip it over. And then depending on what the filling is going to be, you put the filling on right then after you flipped it over, or you cook it for another 90 seconds, put it on a board, and put the filling on right then and cut it.
Oh,
so it's
wow,
really easy.
So the filling is typically not cooked the whole time the pizza's in the oven.
No, you're not. You can in some, but what I do, I don't care much for pizza sauce. I like fresh tomato concasse, which is really just chopped tomatoes from chopped, seeded, and peeled tomatoes, seasoned with a little bit of salt and maybe some herbs.
Hmm.
That's tomato concasse. So sometimes I do put it on, and what I'll do is I'll put a couple spoonfuls of the concasse mixed with some olive oil. Then I'll put some slices of fresh mozzarella. And then I might, when I pull it off, I might toss on some sliced cherry tomatoes, or I might put them on while it's on the grill.
Yeah.
The thing you don't want to do is put so many fillings on that it falls through.
It gets
you don't want it
soggy.
To get heavy. You
yeah.
don't want it to get soggy, and you don't want it to get heavy. And certain things work perfectly fine if you put them on the minute you pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
And certain things don't. So I think I probably have several variations here. Let's see if I do. Writing six books at a time, you know, it looks like. I don't. I just do the, this one is tomato concasse, garlic, mozzarella. Oh, this one you do. This one you do. And you can do four at a time. So you get the mozzarella on, and then very quickly you top each pizza with an egg.
Oh, an egg?
A farm egg.
Huh.
And then you cook it until the white is set and the yolk is hot. That pizza is so incredibly good.
Mm.
It's just fabulous. And if you want to hurry, if you're cooking on a Weber or an egg, you can, I wish I was cooking on an egg.
Mm-hmm.
You just quickly cover it.
Oh,
and,
right.
And in like 2 minutes or maximum of 2 minutes, that egg is perfectly cooked. Because,
oh, wow,
you know, the new pizzerias like Vignette in Sebastopol, which I love, and I think we've had Mark on here once before. If we haven't, we will get Mark on. He's the owner. But Vignette and then Rosso, locally, it's getting very popular to have an egg on your pizza. And you're looking puzzled.
Yeah.
Any of the pizzas at Rosso can come with a farm egg.
Hmm.
And they just... when they flip it over, those don't get flipped over, but a couple minutes before it comes out of the oven, they break a nice, good farm egg on top of it, cook it until the white is set, and then, the mushroom pizza at Rosso, because you break into that egg yolk, and you just got all this nice, wonderful, hot egg yolk
like
with cheese.
Yeah.
Mm, it's different.
Oh.
It's different. It's really, really, really good.
Hmm.
Really good. So that's one of the fun things that you get in the tomato book. But I wanted to tell you something else. I think you might find this interesting, and I know there's a picture. In the oil and vinegar book, one of the things I experimented with, gosh, I turned right to the picture. Can't quite see. I started poaching eggs in olive oil instead of water.
Oh, interesting.
I wanted to see what, you know, it's something that a lot of chefs have been doing, you know, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see, is it the real thing? Is it really worth it? Or is it a little too gymnastic? Oh my gosh, it's really, really good. You have to cook it about 60 to 90 seconds is all, but the you get the temperature of the oil up to about 360 degrees, and then you tilt. I put the egg into a little bowl first, and then you just quickly tilt the egg in, and it puffs up. And part of
yeah.
it...
Oh, yeah, like deep frying.
Basically you're deep frying, but you're deep frying it in olive oil. And it takes just about 90 seconds, and then you very carefully lift it out. And I put it onto salad greens, then with a little bit of maybe a mustard vinaigrette or a lemon vinaigrette.
Yeah, the photo in the book shows it looks like a really nice salad.
Just a little lettuce. Yeah. Just a mix of lettuce. And personally, I like to put salt, pepper, and a little bit of my favorite hot sauce on it.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas, who loves eggs, he's 14 now, he just says, "Oh, Mimi, this looks like something you'd get in a really fancy restaurant." He was so impressed. He had me make him two or three for dinner that night. That night I had him try it.
Oh,
but it's really fast. And again, because we have such easy access to fabulous eggs, I mean, don't go do this with an egg that you buy at Safeway or something. It's just not worth it. Do it with a really good egg. Egg from your own chicken, egg from your neighbor's chicken, egg from the farmer's market.
Yeah, I've got a friend that gives me eggs once in a while.
The chickens who live next door to me have moved away. Very sad. I still have access to great eggs, but I miss watching the neighbor's chickens.
They're so fun. Chickens are just amazing to watch. You know,
better than TV.
Everybody thinks they're dumb, but they're pretty, pretty sharp birds.
They are, and their social system is so interesting. They enforce their pecking order.
Yeah, pecking
absolutely.
Order. Absolutely. You can see which one, by where they roost, you can see which one is the senior bird.
Yep.
It's wonderful to watch sometimes.
Yeah.
And if a bird makes a mistake of going to the wrong place, everybody tells them.
Yeah, they let them know. And that's why if you lose a chicken or something, you should never introduce a chicken into a flock of hens. If you want to introduce chickens, introduce a minimum two together, two or three, so that they have their own, and they will all eventually, you know, integrate. But it takes a while.
Yeah, well, I've got a friend has just started a coop, and they had four, and they just bought three new ones in, and they're having to keep the three new ones in a separate part of the cage so that the coop.
Yeah.
They adjust to each other's being there, and then they're going to start actually let them go in together.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be very careful about it. Well, I've yammered on for nearly an hour, haven't I? I want to tell you a couple things that are coming up. Now that I have all these books out, I have to promote them. And publishers don't do as much as they used to. If I want these books to succeed, I got to do a lot. So this Thursday, if you are out and about in Sebastopol, I will be at the lovely Cultivate Home home store. They're on Main Street, same side of the block as Copperfields, a little bit north of Copperfields. I will be there from 3 to 6. I will have my magic pantry apron on display. I might even be wearing it. And we will have, fingers crossed, all 7 of my current books. We will have vinaigrettes and other dressings. We will have More Than Meatballs. We will have the Good Cooks series, which includes salt and pepper, mustard, tomatoes, oil and vinegar, and the fabulous Good Cooks journal, which is an organized journal, food diary, way to not just record your food life, but preserve it and also learn from it. There are 18 basic recipes, and all of the sections for recording things are organized, highly organized. So that will be there as well, and that takes place 3 to 6 this Thursday, January. Wait a minute. July.
Yeah.
July 16th. And then on Friday night, I will be at Copperfields in downtown Calistoga from 7 to 9, where we will be focusing, I think we'll be focusing there on the Good Cook's Book of Tomatoes and the Good Cook's Book of Mustard. And at both of these events, I will have food. Thank you.
the books have been taken. I won't be having any more calls. Thank you. Well, that was that's you've been listening to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in the North Bay and beyond. And thank you to the two callers who we answered the phone for. There were several that didn't get answered. We apologize for that, but the books were gone. Oh, here's Michelle.
Yes, thank you to our congratulations to Mara, who has a cordial water waiting for her Thursday night at Cultivate Home, and to Anne, who will get When French Women Cook at the same place. See you Thursday night at Cultivate Home in Sebastopol.
This is KRCB-FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa. You've been listening to Mouthful.
Grapes are cut.